Welcome to On Purpose with Paul. I am Paul Peters, your amazing host, entrepreneur, business owner, founder of the nonprofit, and best-selling author. I'm here today to talk to you about how to find your purpose. My name is Paul Peters. I'm a proud father of the three kids. I always want to put that as a priority for me. I have a company called Covenant Case Management Services in North Carolina. We primarily work with folks with intellectual disability, mental health, substance abuse. We are looking to expand outside of North Carolina this year. Also have a nonprofit based in North Carolina called the Nehemiah Project. We basically work with individuals that are struggling with addiction, homelessness, seniors, veterans, homeless, and at-risk kids, domestic violence victims, and those with mental health, intellectual disabilities. I want to take my message about what I have discovered helping people find their purpose, and I want to take it worldwide, because I believe if people find their purpose, they're going to find their joy, they're going to find the reason for their existence and how they connect to this world. Good evening. I want to talk with you today about how you discover your purpose. And I want you all to get into a mindset of thinking on purpose. And so I want to give a couple examples, and I want to use some tools, because it's a lot easier for us when we think about, I need to get a screwdriver, I need to get a hammer, because you have a specific purpose in mind in doing that. So I happen to have a screwdriver here. So when we have a screwdriver and we need to use it, it's usually to screw in a screw into the wall or hang a picture. And when we think about that, we also understand that this screwdriver was created by somebody with that specific purpose. When we shared last week that we are all created specifically unique and different, we all have a specific purpose in our lives to fulfill. And we as humans are sometimes multi-purpose in regards to, and I'm going to give several examples. So I have a phone here. The phone, when it was first created, was simply a form of communication. That was its purpose. But when you look at the modern day phone, it not only communicates, it takes pictures, you can watch movies, it has multi-purposes. So when we think about us and what is our purpose, is it so singly defined like a screwdriver? Sometimes, but not necessarily. Because, like I said before, we are created for a specific purpose. And sometimes that purpose is not easy to find. If we're created like a screwdriver, it's pretty clear what that purpose is. And God makes it specifically difficult for us because he's trying to get us to a point of searching. I'm going to be sharing a story that I think lays that out. Because so often, as I shared last week, we have a vision of what we want to do, and often when the vision begins to work in that direction and we begin to manifest, sometimes we're going to face trials. And I'm going to tell you the story of a man named Joseph, who was a dreamer, a visionary, much like myself. And he went through obstacles, and his purpose was not fulfilled until a little bit later, I believe 14 years. So I want to talk with you about some of the things that I discovered, and I shared some of my life story last week, and I will share some more with you. And I'm going to use my illustration from the book, my first book, Discovering and Embracing Your Life Purpose. And it's on here is a path. So I want to kind of paint a picture of how I created this. And what I typically do when I write is I will go ahead and create the picture of what I want the finished product to be. And then what I do is I hire a designer and basically explain to him what it is I envision the cover to look like. This is before one word has been written in this book. So for me, I go ahead and create the finished product that already sets my mind in motion that this is going to be a finished book. And then once I have the picture designed, I will then put it in front of me every day that will then force me to get into a situation to begin to write the book and begin to develop the topics in the book. And for me, I never envisioned myself to be an author. But then I thought to myself, I wanted to do something different. I wanted to do something where I could leave my message, my legacy. And that typically is done in various ways. You can do it through a book. You can do it through counseling. You can do it through a song. Because when we pass on out of this life, what we leave behind is the message we're going to leave behind. And for me, I knew that God had given me a message to speak. And so that's why I decided I wanted to write. And the key factor for me is, did I believe that I was an author? And that is so important when we are living out our purpose. Because as I said last week, the element of belief drives us to the point of completion of whatever that vision is. And I had to see myself as an author. And I'm telling you, I was not the best English student. And if you've seen my handwriting, I'm definitely not the best at grammar and how the writing looks. But thank goodness, because we have modern day technology, I can type it, so you'd never know that I'm a bad speller or a bad writer. But what I did is I began to believe in myself. And I had something that I shared with you last week, something within us that drives us to do the thing that we want to accomplish. And for me, I knew I had a message, because in my own pursuit of trying to identify what my purpose was, I simply asked the question, do other people have that same question? Do other people have that same drive? And I shared some of the story in regards to some of the struggles I faced, and recognizing that was not the life, the choice that I wanted to live out in my life. I wanted more. I wanted joy. I wanted fulfillment. I wanted peace. And so I pursued that. And for me, it was in a relationship with the Father, because I shared my story about my own father. And as I began to draw closer and understand a little bit more through the life choices that I made, I began to get a little bit closer as to what I believe God's purpose was for my life. And so when I wrote this book, and I don't know if you can see it, but the end goal was the castle. And for all of us, we have an end goal. What do we want? It may be the car, it may be the castle, it may be whatever that may be. And then there's a journey, there's a path. So this book is very symbolic of the path we all take. And on this path, were puzzle pieces. And you're probably asking yourself, puzzle pieces, what does that mean? Well, when I looked at purpose, and I'll read some of these, when I looked at discovering your purpose, much like the difference between the screwdriver, which typically has one purpose or one puzzle piece, trying to discover your life purpose has elements of various puzzle pieces. And so when I looked at how does one begin to discover their purpose, and I simply reflected on my own journey, when I looked at my upbringing, when I looked at some of the challenges, when I looked at my own gifts in regards to what was put within me that was different than anyone else, when I looked at my strengths, what is it that I'm pretty good at, and what is it that I'm not that good at? And then I also looked at other attributes in regards to my faith. And so when you look at all of these different elements that make up who we are, and remember, we are unique. There is no one else like us. And it's interesting, because in that, God has specifically designed us to do something special. And for me, it's in the context of the relationship with God that he began to reveal. And so when you understand that the creator in the sense of the screwdriver or the creator of the phone, had a purpose in mind with whoever was going to use it. And so often the creator of the screwdriver or the phone would have instruction manuals. And that instruction manual basically told the user, this is how you use it to serve its purpose. When you have more complex items, such as an automobile or different things, the instruction manual is a little bit more thicker and detailed. And so it's kind of the same thing with us. We are very complicated beings. And so often, if we want to understand what is our purpose, we have to go to the Creator. Well, the Creator created an instruction manual. For me, on my faith, that happens to be the Bible. And so when I look at why and how God created me, he gave some wise words, some instruction to help me understand my journey. And the neat thing about it, he used a lot of stories, a lot of examples of other people who have journeyed that same path. And so one of the things I'm going to help you all understand is the need and the power of confronting your fear and beginning to transform your life to live out your purpose and ultimately live out the legacy you've called to live out. And so part of that journey for me was to understanding, when I looked at all areas of my life that I was beginning to grow in and beginning to see the things that God had done for me at the time, it was painful. It was difficult for me to go from being homeless to then humbling myself, living with my brother, who was, you know, one of my mentors, living with him and having him guide me and direct me and getting my life back on course. That was very humbling for me. But that is the very requirement if you're going to change. You've got to be willing to humble yourself and have others teach you. We take this for granted because many of us go to school because we're trying to learn and acquire a skill, if it's a vocational, or we're required to go to elementary, middle school, high school. And we've got people, principals, teachers, instructors, that are trying to pour into us the knowledge and the education for us to be successful. And the more willing we are to obey and listen, the better it's going to be. Not only will we have good grades, but we're going to benefit from what they're trying to teach us because they themselves are knowledgeable, skilled, masters at their trade per se, and they're trying to get us to a point where we can begin to learn and apply those things. Well, that's how life works. And when we look at people such as, you know, if whatever your heroes or your idols, many of them, such a grown-up, young boys, loved sports figures. They just epitomized what it was to be a hero. And so when we look to these heroes or heroines, we're looking to what they've accomplished. And the important thing is not so much what they accomplished, which is great and wonderful. I grew up, and many of you all still know Michael Jordan. He was from Chicago. I'm from Chicago. And so he was a great basketball, some say the greatest basketball player. And was he any different than you and I? Yes and no. He had a dream. He had a goal. We'll be right back after these messages. Was this a gift that just was, he was anointed with the ability to jump as high as he could or dribble and be so gifted? That was a skill that was given to him but was perfected with discipline and practice. Any gift given to us has to be trained and disciplined to be the best. Not everybody strives to be the best, but we should strive to be the best version of who we are. Because when we're the best version of who we are authentic to what God created us to be and who He created us to be. Because remember, that's all we are. God created us uniquely, specifically, and if we align ourselves with the purpose of the creation by the Creator, we will begin to live out the very calling of our life. And you will begin to exhibit what I would call the fruits, the benefits of that, because you're going to have those emotions that are in line with being in alignment with your purpose. And that would be, and the Bible references them as the fruits of the Spirit. Those are the things within our spirit, within our soul, that we strive for. Most everybody I know is looking for some sense of happiness, some sense of joy, some sense of peace. Well, I've discovered when I'm living out my purpose and I'm serving people, I'm at my greatest joy. I'm at my greatest peace. And it's all because it's all about exhibiting the very calling of my life to love and serve other people. And so that's what we're going to strive to do on this show. I'm trying to give you all a deeper understanding of how you begin to look for that purpose. And it's almost like we're all going back to elementary school. No, you do not get a nap. And part of it is we're going to begin to look at what are the things that we do that are different than anyone else. So for me, and I was just your average kid. I was not gifted with intelligence. I was not gifted with an extremely sexy body. But who is it at birth? You know, we're a little fat and a little overweight at sometimes. And so what I began to discover, the uniqueness of myself and how I was created came out of the forging through the trials and the challenges that I had to begin to recognize I'm different, I'm special. And often we talk about, what does that special mean? I work with folks with intellectual disability. They are often called special needs. And truly they are, but so are we all. We're all special, we're all unique, because there's something about us that nobody else possesses. And if we begin to focus on those strengths, those uniqueness about us, and we begin to get comfortable in our own skin, we begin to be real. We begin to be authentic. And when we begin to be real and authentic, we are comfortable in our own skin. A lot of people are not comfortable in their own skin because, one, they don't really like themselves too much. And they often will try to be something that they're not. And when you try to be something that you're not, the inconsistency is going to be revealed in your character, in your behavior, in your mannerisms. But when you are comfortable and you are serving your purpose and you are loving what you do, there's such a realness and authenticity that people will be attracted to. And that's what God wants us to. He wants us to be in line with our purpose. So if I was going to, and believe me, I have, because I'm not the best with tools. If I was going to use this screwdriver as a hammer, that is not in alignment with its purpose. It still can work, but not as good as a hammer, which a hammer's ultimate purpose is to pound things such as a nail. And so very, very important, we understand what our purpose is. And as, like I said, we're multifaceted, much like the phone. So it's really about beginning to recognize and identify what it is that we do that maybe no one else does. Now, you've got your individuals, like I shared, Michael Jordan, you've got your Mother Teresa's, you've got your people who can sing amazing like an angel. Do they have that unique talent? They sure do. Most of it comes from training and refining their skills. Each of us has a gift. Each of us has a skill. Each of us serves a purpose. And there's many people in history that are more recognized because, do they have more talent? Not necessarily. It may be because of a greater need. So you've got people that will stand out in history, but you've got your average Joes. And one that comes to mind is Lincoln. Lincoln was your average Joe. He wasn't the greatest, smartest, but he never gave up. And if you study Lincoln and you study his life story, there was a lot of suffering in Lincoln's life. But he became the president. And when you think about it, as a young kid, some of us aspire, I want to be the president of the United States. That is a big goal to aspire to. And so when we have those big goals, part of it is believe in that dream, follow that dream. And as you follow that dream, as I said before, God is going to begin to nudge you and begin to give you the direction you need on that path. Because ultimately, as I said before, the Creator knows what He created you for, and He has a purpose in mind with what you're going to do. And He knows exactly when He wants you to do that. So it's almost like you're given an appointed day and time to be at a certain location to do a certain thing. And you follow in obedience to that direction. And then you show up and almost out of nowhere, you know exactly what to do. And because you know exactly what to do, when to do it, you perform that skill, that miracle, to be able to maybe save a life. And so when we think about the great people who are accomplished, who have done great and wonderful things, one, they discipline themselves. They recognize their gift and talent. They sharpen their skills so that they could be a master of what they do. And they did it every day. They were disciplined. They developed rituals to accomplish those things. And those great and wonderful people, which I've given you a couple names, can also be you. And I hope and pray that it is you. But like I said before, it starts with the seeking. It starts with the asking. Then it begins to be empowered by a sense of belief. And then once we have that sense of belief, we begin to walk. You know, the Bible references it, faith. We walk in faith in the direction of the thing we want and desire. And to give you another Bible verse, God will give us the desires of our heart when they're in line with His purposes. And that's pretty powerful, because when that promise is given to us that we will receive the very things we ask and they are in line with His purpose, we know that we are in alignment with what God's called us to do. So I want to share a story with you that some of you may be familiar with. There was a young man named Joseph. He wasn't the youngest of all of his brothers, but he was the second to the youngest. And he worked in a family that were their shepherds and farmers and different things like that. And Joseph was different. Joseph was, and I can resonate with Joseph because he was a dreamer. He was a visionary. He wasn't like his brothers, but he was also one of the favorites of his father. And so when Joseph had these dreams, he was also pretty young. Joseph was probably about 17, 18, and he began to share his dream of what his vision was, which really was a picture of what was going to happen in the future. And so Joseph shared the story with his brothers that he was going to be in a position of power, and then his brothers would bow down before him. Well, the brothers weren't too excited about that. They were like, "We're not bowing down to you. There's no way. You're younger than us. You don't work as hard as we do." And so they didn't like Joseph, and they bullied Joseph, bullying him to a point where they actually contemplated killing their own brother. That's how much they despised Joseph. And so they gathered together and thought, "Oh, how can we do this? Because we don't want our dad to find out that what happened." So they decided to develop a plot against Joseph. And that plot was to kidnap him and then sell him into slavery. So you're thinking, "Oh my gosh, this visionary had this dream, this vision, and now he's a slave. How can this vision be accomplished?" Well, there was something unique about Joseph. And I don't know if you remember when I shared before that when God plants a vision into our heart and into our mind, it doesn't necessarily mean that seed is going to manifest the next day or overnight. It basically means that God is doing a work in us that will begin to manifest in its appropriate time and place, because he knows exactly when that gift, that talent is going to be needed. And so when you look at the life of Joseph, he was sold into slavery. He then was bought by a person in a very high position in government, but he was a slave. But Joseph was such an honorable man, a man of integrity, that this man who was high up in government began to trust Joseph and basically put him in positions of authority and leadership over his own home. And so he was still being honored even though he was a slave. And it was interesting because the man who was in charge, his wife was starting to have some attraction towards Joseph, because Joseph was probably maybe 23, good-looking man. And so she kind of came on to Joseph, and Joseph recognized, "This is my master, this is my boss. And yeah, she's good looking, but I don't want to jeopardize my job." And so he says, "No." Well, she's pretty forceful, and she ends up taking him by the clothing and basically tearing it off him. He runs. He didn't want to get in trouble, and she basically falsely accuses him of raping her. And you've got to be asking yourself, what? This man was given a vision, was falsely accused, and because he was falsely accused, he then had to go to jail. And like, okay, when does the good stuff come? when was the rest of the story? And it was interesting because when he went to jail, knowing he was falsely accused, he was put in a position in the jail to basically oversee the whole jail. And so he remained faithful to wherever he was. And I know a lot of us like, "Oh, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that." But there was something about Joseph, and this is why it's so important, no matter what challenge we're in, we never give up on our dream. We never give up on our vision. We'll be right back after these messages. And so he was put in a position to basically oversee all the inmates and different things. And there were two men that were thrown in jail. Now, they actually worked for the king, so they were in a high position, but they were thrown in jail for various reasons. And so Joseph had a rare skill, and very few people, I think, in this world have this skill, gifted with the ability to interpret dreams. I'm thinking, wow, that'd be cool. Somebody has a dream, I can be an interpreter. I can make some money off that. And so both of these men that worked for the king had dreams, but they couldn't understand what the dreams were. So they found out Joseph has this really cool skill, and they told Joseph the dream, and Joseph went ahead and interpreted the dreams to them. One of them was going to be released and was going to be put back into a position of authority within the king. The other one was going to be killed. And so, of course, what ends up happening is the one that was told he was going to be put back in position of authority, was given that position, was reinstated in his job with the king. And so Joseph's like, okay, I did the nice thing. When am I getting out of here? That didn't happen. So a period went by, and the king had a dream. And nobody could interpret this dream. And so the man that was reinstated remembered, oh my goodness, there's a man in prison named Joseph that I believe he can interpret your dream. And so what ended up happening is the king called for Joseph to come and interpret the dream. And Joseph did interpret the dream, and he did it correctly. And because the king was so impressed, he told Joseph, I'm going to put you in position directly under me to help prepare for what you just told me in regards to what was going to happen with my dream. And so basically what Joseph told him is that there was going to be 7 years of abundance, 7 years of harvest. And then after that, there was going to be 7 years of poverty and famine. And the king thought to himself, anyone who could interpret what I just dreamed also has the ability to prepare us for such a time. And so what ended up happening is Joseph, who years ago was sold into slavery, was falsely accused, was imprisoned, was now in a position of authority, only second to the king. And it's interesting because he then, through his wise stewardship, was able to save Egypt, was able to save the many countries around him and his own family because famine had stricken the land. And when you think about what was the vision put within him began to manifest out 14 years later. And it was interesting because the very brothers who threw him into the pit had to now bow before him. But they bowed before him, but they didn't know it was Joseph because they thought Joseph had died. So it's very interesting. And how many of us, when we're put in that position where the very people who hurt us or betray us, even our own family members, we have the ability to humble ourselves and recognize that although we went through trials and challenges, that in the right timing, that purpose was going to manifest. And Joseph had a choice. Do I forgive my brothers who sought to injure me and harm me? Or do I recognize that the very purpose that I was called, that was given to me when I was 17, but would later manifest in a position where I could be a leader and make decisions that would save the lives of millions? He made that right choice, and he basically forgave his brothers. He was reunited with his family, and we see the nation of Israel was saved because of the providential calling on Joseph's life. And I tell you that story because often we don't always know what's going to happen. And often we see things happening to us and it's like, oh, I want this, I want this, I'm gonna get this. And then we run into trials. And I'm going to tell you why that is the case. So many of you get challenged and then you give up on your dream. Because when God creates a purpose and a calling on our life, something special that is going to impact one person or 100 people or 1,000 or 1,000,000, there is a proper classroom that we have to go through, that God begins to take us through to prepare us in the future for the great calling he's going to give to us, because he's trying to prepare us so basically we would be responsive, we would be quote unquote obedient to that calling. Because remember what I said, if you're going to be a master at a certain skill, it's going to require sacrifice, it's going to require surrender, it's going to require habitual patterns that are going to, you're going to have to develop discipline. And think about somebody who is a bodybuilder who basically carves their muscles so they can be in competition. Do you think that happens overnight? Oh my gosh, no. Master carpenter, that does not happen overnight. Each of us is going to identify something within us. And like I said, we're going to go into detail in the coming weeks in regards to what are the specific uniqueness that each of us possesses that's different than the other. Because it's in the differences when we work together that, and I liken the picture on my book, the puzzle pieces, they fit so nicely together that our differences are actually created so that we can begin to work together. And remember what I said last week, God's prayer is that we be one as He is one. That doesn't mean we are alike in every capacity. It means we are one in regards to recognizing I have certain gifts and skills, and so do you. And so when we work together, we are in unity, in harmony, because when we look at the example of the orchestra, you've got horns, you've got drums, you've got all those things. But when they work in alignment with their giftedness and their skills, you hear harmony. It's absolutely beautiful. And that's where we need to make sure we're focused on what is our uniqueness, living out that calling and purpose, and then we then begin to work together in unity for whatever we're called to serve. I mean, I'm trying to give you another good example. So you have an academia. Let me use that example. And so you have somebody who will go towards a major, and typically the major is going to have different specialties. And so in the specialty, you're going to have certain teachers that teach a certain skill, and then you have teachers that teach a certain skill. But in order for that person to get accomplished in that major, they need to begin to master each of those classes so that they can begin to utilize the multifaceted purposes. So for example, if I was going to be a computer science major like my two kids, I said, it's not simply about being at the computer learning how to use the keyboard. There's a lot that's involved. And so I'm not a computer science major. My major was psychology. And I shared with you before, I chose psychology because I was trying to figure out what made Paul Peters tick. Why did Paul Peters have to go through some of the challenges he did? And like I said, much of my life, it was almost like the story of Joseph. You know, I went through the pity parties. I'm sure Joseph did. Why am I suffering for some of the choices that I made? But little did I know, and I would know later as an adult, that God allowed me to go through that because He recognized eventually Paul Peters would figure this out, and Paul Peters would begin to work with people in their lives who had taken the same choice or made the same choices, had some of the same struggles. Because I'm one that believes that God does not want us to suffer in that way. He allows it so that He can use it so that we can help other people. And so when I look at my life, and I'll go in some detail on some of the things that I left out before. So after, you know, I had kind of gone through that point where I had moved in with my brother and I was truly humble. I took some positions as a waiter in several restaurants, and it began to serve people. Now, I love people. When I was younger, I loved people because I craved the attention. And I recognize now, of course, that my desire to seek attention was simply to meet a need that was totally unfulfilled. And when you are a quote-unquote, I call myself a reformed people pleaser, when you are trying to please people in order to meet a need, that is never ever going to be met. Because there's certain things our Creator created us to be fulfilled. And for me, that fulfillment came when I began to recognize my fulfillment only comes in Him. And so that's why it was so important for me, who didn't have a father, to get that satisfaction in regards to relationships and my relationship with Him. And once I began to understand that, I didn't seek that in other people. And so I shifted what I would call a people pleaser to a people server. And when you begin to understand that, because the people pleaser is really someone who's very selfish. They just want their own needs met. And in a lot of ways, they're using people for that purpose. A lot of times we've heard the term codependency. You're using somebody else to meet a particular need that you have, which is not a necessary healthy response. And so God was taking me through that process, that transformation, that evolving process to get me to a point of recognizing what I needed, had to identify the certain things in myself that were getting in the way. I've referred to them as self-sabotaging. And one of them was, I just didn't like myself very much. And I thought to myself, if I don't like myself very much, I'm probably not going to do pretty well at liking other people. And so I had to kind of put some focus on how do I begin to like myself? Because if you don't like yourself, you're going to actually get in your own way and sabotage any concept of what success is, any concept of living out a purpose, because you don't feel worthy. And many of us, including myself, I didn't feel worthy to be able to believe that God had gifted me to do something great. I'm thinking, I'm not great. I'm barely making it, you know. But part of the transformation process is recognizing that I'm pretty special. That doesn't make me any better than anyone else. When you say you're pretty special, it means you're unique. And there's something about each of us, once we get a hold of that uniqueness and we begin to recognize, I can do this, and this is what I'm called to do, so I'm going to go out and do it. And then I'm going to figure out, through God's help and mentors, how do I then make this a career? How do I then take what I'm gifted at to do it and to make money so that I can live? It's not so much to live on, how do I live in abundance? We will be right back after these messages. And when I talk about abundance, a lot of us have a misunderstanding what abundance is. It's not necessarily the attainment of a lot of wealth. And I shared with you last week, wealth, money, is a tool to be used for myself. It was a tool to be used to serve other people. And as long as you have the right mindset and you use that to serve other people and you're using it in line with your purpose and calling, you will be blessed. And I'm one of those individuals that believe you will receive the money you needed for that specific calling. I can't always give you an understanding of how that all works. Part of the journey is we live in a society that we want to have the answers now before we put in the work and the effort to get them. And that's where faith element comes in. We walk in faith in regards to moving in that direction, and we've got to understand that as we walk in that direction, things will be given to us that will encourage us to keep going. And that's how my journey has been. That's why it took so long. I did and had to deal with a lot of self-sabotaging behavior so that I wouldn't continue to take 3 steps forward, 5 steps back. And I also had to recognize through the application of wisdom, which I shared with you last week, that's why this book, The Ways of Wisdom, was so important to me. Because if I did not learn from my mistakes, I would repeat those mistakes. And nobody likes to repeat their mistakes. I tell people, when you continue to make mistakes, you're going to continue to make mistakes until you learn the lesson. Because I don't believe God and our parents want us to continue to make those mistakes. If we simply obeyed the first time that we were asked to do something, we wouldn't struggle so much. But there's that element in each and every one of us, call it pride, that says, I can do it my way. Well, your way may be fine, but if you don't know how to do it, then your way is going to fail. And that's why it's very important that we have the element of humility and recognizing that the person put before us that is trying to teach us has gone that path before. And if we want to learn the lesson and then move on to the next step or the next level, we've got to recognize that person is trying to instruct us, trying to help us. And we learn that principle, and then we begin to master that skill. And once you've mastered that skill, you have a responsibility as a steward of that skill to then teach other people. The Bible references that as discipling. And when you think about the root word of disciple is to discipline. So you are being trained to develop a skill that's in line with your calling, in line with your purpose, so that you can teach and instruct or use that gift to make a living, to honor other people. I think about many people, most of us, if not all of us, love music. We will pay a lot of money to go to a concert to hear a particular artist that we absolutely love. And we love them because they're masters in what they do. We all have certain music that we like. I grew up in the 70s and 80s, so I'm a big 70s, 80s lover. And so it's very encouraging when I hear my kids playing music from the 80s, like, yeah, it's the best music ever. And so we enjoy that because that individual, that musician, has mastered that skill. And so it's the same thing. It doesn't necessarily have to be music. It could be art. It could be another profession, photography. And so it's really all about using your gifts to be a blessing to others and to serve other people. And so when we do that, we're living in alignment with what we're called to do. And so when I think about my life and the journey that I took, most of it, you've heard the term hindsight is 20/20. And so I learned a lot of the lessons, and I look backwards and it's like, okay, I'm making a lot less mistakes, primarily because I'm like, I don't want to suffer anymore. I suffered too much in my youth. And I recognize, as the old saying is, you know, once you get older, you recognize how much you really don't know. And there is really some truth to that, because there's a lot to know. And sometimes when we're younger, we think we know it all, but we really don't. And that's where the element of pride comes in. And so we've got to make sure we're being teachable, we're being humble, and that we know enough to be dangerous, as they say, but we want to also make sure that whatever we've mastered out of discipline, out of timing, out of a sense of belief, out of a sense of commitment, we then pass that on to somebody else, because that in itself is a legacy itself. For me, my writing has been a legacy for me. My raising my kids has been a legacy for me. So let me share a little bit about my kids. They're my life and joy, and I actually happen to have one of them in the studio here. And so when I think about the struggles that I face, so I shared with you before, earlier, that not having a dad, I could have gone one of two directions. So I could have been a horrible dad because I didn't have a good role model. But the craving in my heart to be loved helped me to understand I did not want to have whatever children I did have one day to go through what I went through. Often the change that we want is because of the suffering we've gone through and the leverage to make sure we will do whatever is necessary to not go through that again, or not to have anyone else go through that again. And for me, it's like, I did not want my children, and at that point when I was younger, I didn't have any kids. I self-sabotaged a lot of my relationships. And so part of it is, I just wanted to make sure if I did anything right, I wanted to make sure that I was a good dad. And so I had the opportunity. I kind of was a late bloomer, I share with you. I got married in my mid-30s. And the first marriage did not last very long. It was a trial run, you should say. And it was a complete byproduct of some of the issues that I had in regards to sabotaging relationships. And I got a second chance after many years of trying to figure out this whole dating relationship and all of that. And I ended up getting married, and I ended up having two wonderful kids. And from that, you know, they're both, one is, actually both are graduate from college. And so, but one of the things that happened is the kids were like 5 and 6, and my marriage began to fall apart. And I'm not proud to say that, but the one thing that I was committed to, even though I did everything I could to salvage my marriage, was to make sure that my kids grew up with a father that absolutely adored them. And I spent years pouring into my kids in regards to going through the custody and all the things that, that we all go through in the divorce. And as they grew older, the one thing they recognized is dad was gonna always be there for them. Even though, like, during the separation, it had some challenges. And I was faithful. I would have lunch with the kids twice until it got to a point where they're in middle school, and you parents that have middle schoolers recognize, yeah, that's not so cool anymore. My friends was like, why is your dad here, you know? I would go to have lunch with them, even if they wanted me to in high school. That's how committed I was to them, because I knew, even though I didn't have the quantity time with them, I had the quality time with them. So I invested in time with them, recognizing that I was instilling in them the very one thing we all need, and that is a sense of love, that we are loved, we are appreciated. And I wanted to make sure that I did not leave the legacy that my father left for me. And so I'm proud to say I have a great relationship with my two kids of natural birth. And the son that's in the studio with me happens to be the son I'm going to be adopting. He's from Costa Rica. And I've embraced him as if he's my own son. So I've been honored to be able to have an impact on three kids. And I have not shared about my fourth child. His name is Jordan, and I was given the privilege of being able to take care of him after my divorce. He was being raised by his great-grandmother. He happens to have some intellectual disabilities, autism, and some other disabilities. And so I took on the challenge of raising him as a single parent. I took care of him for so many years. Right now I have a caregiver taking care of him. So that is the greatest calling for me, not being an author, not being a business owner, not being an entrepreneur. It is being a dad. And I'm going to tell you why that's so important to me, because when my pursuit to really have a relationship with my father, and I recognized the relationship I've always wanted with my father came in my relationship with the Heavenly Father. I thought there's no greater calling than to be a dad. And so that's why I've committed my life to my kids. And even though much of the quality time was taken away because of the divorce, the quality time that I was given with my kids traveling the world, it's just amazing what an experience that was to be able to go to different places, be able to experience that quality time with my kids. And that's something that I will have for the rest of my life. And when I pass on, my prayer is my kids will take that same kind of relationship they had with me, and they will carry it on to their own relationship with their kids. So I say that not to say, oh, Paul's a great dad. It's all about leaving a legacy and leaving a mark on the people that come into our life, on the core values, what matters most. And so when I look back on my life, and I'm trying to help you all understand how the concept of purpose plays out in some of the choices that we make and some of the choices that are made for us. In my situation, the choice that was made for me in regards to my dad and the choices that he made to be a bad dad and a bad example for me laid the groundwork for me to be the best kind of dad that I can be, to leave an impact on my kids that stopped that generational abuse that I experienced and my father experienced because he was raised in a very dysfunctional home. And when I shared with you before about the story of Nehemiah, and so when Nehemiah went into a situation that was absolutely hopeless, he instilled a sense of hope, a sense of belief that this could be done. He also let them know that they were going to have some challenges. But if we stuck together, if we worked together, we keep our eye on the ball, our eye on the focus of what we're trying to do. And remember what I said when I created the books. I first developed the finished product. And so Nehemiah created the vision to the community. This is what we're doing. This is where we're going. If we work together, don't give up, we will rebuild this wall. Thank you so much.